Jill won't be able to make this today, so she has to be recorded. So the last time we talked about David, and I've done most of the talking, so I'd be glad to hear anyone else make comments. And what a tremendous talk he just gave. It's just amazing. And wisdom poured from him so easily, it seemed. Very little preparation, except living the life that he was living. Anyone care to discuss their first meeting of David?
Are you asking any of us, Larry, or?
Oh, yes, of course. That's the whole point of this.
I remember when I first came to see David, it was at Elaine's house. And I remember thinking, I wonder if this is the person that's got some answers for me. Because I was searching a lot. And when I heard him speaking, giving the talk, it was just like food, you know, a good meal. It was like, wow, this is just so meaningful. And like plain English, you know, and fantastic.
Mm,
that's
nice.
I remember thinking, well, I don't know much about this group or his teachings, and I wonder what he expects. Like, am I supposed to swallow all of this with faith, complete faith, and not question anything? Or how does this work, you know? So I went to see him alone shortly after that, and I asked him that question, and he said, well, I'm an outer guru, and you have an inner guru, and you must always trust your inner guru. And I thought, oh, wow, I love that answer. Fantastic. So it's just been, I'm still boggled and amazed and in awe when I hear everything he has to say. Mm-hmm. And what Master has to say, and Mother, just the way they write so poetically and cover so many aspects of life and questions and why we're here and how to go about life and everything, you know.
Yeah.
So that's my little story.
That's very nice. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I remember those meetings up in Tulane's. It was wonderful. Very powerful time.
And I do remember having a 50th birthday party, maybe at Elaine's house. Do you remember that one?
So that would have been 2004. No, I don't remember that. No. Maybe I wasn't there.
Yeah. It was lovely.
And that was the house in Kerrisdale, the house. Yeah.
Yes.
The house as opposed to the condominium, is what I meant to say.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very nice.
And he was so trusting. Like, I had my baby was 1 or 2 years old, and I used to bring her to meetings, and I was always careful to take her out if she got fussy. But fortunately, most of the time she tended to sleep, you know. And I remember Elaine, who was my sister-in-law, kind of worrying a bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
And she brought that up with David, and he was just like so trusting, like, well, Jerry always leaves if she's fussy, don't worry about it. We can have babies at the meetings. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't really strict in any of that fashion, was he?
No. I felt very accepted, and I brought my elder one along to some of the retreats and the baby,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the baby's 23 now.
Yeah, that's hard to believe, isn't it? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So baby was at Kriya too. She was one. Yeah. She's in the Kriya photos.
I'll share my first meeting. Well, my first meeting was when I was a little kid, so I don't remember that as much. But as an adult, I had been reading the autobiography of a yogi, which I borrowed from my mom's shelf after I became a yoga teacher. I saw it, and it had been mentioned in my yoga training. And so I saw it on her shelf, and I thought, for some reason, I need to read that. And so I borrowed it and then became convinced without talking to anyone that I needed to move to California and go to master's places and be there, because it was just, there's nothing that I'd ever read or experienced that was the truth until I read that. So I had just moved to Port Townsend, was living up there and very lonely kind of a life. And reading this book, and I thought, I have to move. And so I told my mom that I had to move to California. And she said, no, you don't need to move to California. And I was kind of, going through a really big spiritual crisis and health crises, and it was just a really difficult time. But she said, no, we're going to go, I'm going to take you to David. And it coincided with an Easter. And so we had been planning on going to this church on Bainbridge the next day, which was Easter, and we totally switched our plans and went to Mount Vernon.
Wow.
And I had no idea what to expect. I just knew that she was taking me to the right place, and I trusted her. And
did you remember him from your childhood?
Not much, no. In fact, when I was young, I always got him mixed up with Mira's brother in my head. Like, oh. David Hickenbottom and David Lutz, for some reason.
Lutz, yeah.
I didn't know who was who for a little, when I was pretty little, you know.
Were you into Sunday school classes? You were, weren't you?
I think I was in some, yeah. I was really young. I don't have a lot of memories from when I was young. I do have a couple of, you know, sitting in a circle and chanting some ohms, mm-hmm. And hearing the ohms from the adults. And that was when you and Kate were living in the first place in West Seattle. Just a couple, but I don't have any clear memories of, like, David, you know.
When he was a Sunday school teacher for several of those years. So I just
yeah, but her. Brianna was little, and then they went to New Zealand. So I remember her in a Sunday school class. Mm-hmm. But it was the older children who had David, so that's probably why she didn't have him as a
yeah
teacher.
Well, anyway, so I interrupted you, Brianna, go ahead and
finish.
So it was an Easter, you're saying?
Yeah, it was an Easter in 2009, okay. I believe.
Oh.
And so my mom and I went, and I remember it was pouring rain and I was nervous. And we went and we joined the group and sat and listened, and there was incense and the chanting, and I think David talked a lot about Swamiji because he had passed away a few months before that, or
yeah, just
I might have the timing a little bit wrong, but
yeah, no, 6 months before that he passed, 5 months, yeah.
And so I was just absolutely like floored in my seat. I don't even remember what he talked about other than Swamiji, but just being in his presence, and I'd never experienced anything like it in my life. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was with Mother when I was little too, but I don't remember, you know, on a human level very well. And I was supposed to go up and hug him afterwards, and my heart was like exploding out. You know, I thought it was just going to jump out of my chest. I couldn't breathe. I was kind of hiding behind my mom a little bit. It's so embarrassing. But we went up, and my mom introduced me, and you know, I think we got our hugs, and I just never touched the ground again that day. I just couldn't, my feet were completely airborne, and he took me downstairs at the potluck to pick out a picture of Mother and Master from a file box he had, just him and I. And I can't really describe it, but I remember standing with other devotees, and I think Chad was there, and people were talking about how we were the same age, and I was thinking, how did I not already be with David like this person that's the same age, you know?
Your thought going there was that you could be meeting your guru. That's really
I didn't know that exactly, but I knew that from reading Master, I had to have somebody or something in my life. I couldn't go on any longer. I was so miserable. I don't know what I expected.
Right.
I don't think I expected anything, but I knew I needed help so desperately that, and my mom was taking me to the right place. I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we left, I was supposed to be the one driving. And that was really hard. It was like, I was so uplifted. I'd never experienced anything except reading Master's book, you know, that had just given me such joy and happiness and hope, like that there was something more to life that, you know, my miserable life until then was like all leading to that point. And so.
Well, that's the best type of realization, isn't it? That you've met someone who's integral to your very reason for being on this planet, on this earth, why we came, because that's really what we're all faced with, isn't it? Sorting that out initially, it's sometimes the hardest thing to do and the most important.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, I found it really interesting that growing up, the path was around me. There were pictures. I think that's why I sparked with Yogananda when my yoga teacher trainer she said, oh, Paramahansa Yogananda. And I was like, I kind of recognize that name. But it never was like, oh, I know this path really well. I guess my mom was kind of more private about it. And other than when I was really little, you know. And so it was such a kind of a miracle to just be returned to it and know that it had been there, you know, probably supporting me the whole time, but not really knowing it. And
yeah. Well, that's lovely to hear. It really is. It's really interesting. You know, this is such a common experience, and it's such a common thing to hear from people to say that they don't remember what was said, but they remember. The more important thing really is this beam of light that comes from a guru. Now, I know we have this with other experiences too in life, but that it can happen on the God plane, because that's usually what's being discussed, and on the higher planes. If that happens, then you know that there's this connection coming from this individual, this master. You know, it comes as it's a radiation, and it's really what the soul clings to and the knowledge comes from that. The knowledge that this is the way I want to go. And it's funny to think it's not a rational process, because so many people can't remember what was first said.
And I feel so grateful that it was so fast for me. It was like, as soon as I walked in the door, I knew that I would never leave this person's feet. You know, like, I didn't even know what that meant, but I knew it was true. Like, it was just instinct, like absolute trust, absolute, like, I have to do this.
Just as I described, it was the radiant power of being in his presence. That's really a good explanation. It's lovely.
I'm going to bump in here, Larry. I'm going to scoop the announcement that I asked. I just wanted to jump in. I've been asked by Carla to start to compile stories for a book similar to what we did for Mother, Memories of Mother. We are going to do a book of, I don't know what the title will be yet, but it will be Memories of David will be the sort of working title. But today, the stories that you're telling or the experiences you're sharing, please write them down. And as other people are telling of their experience, if it triggers your memory or you're thinking, gee, I remember this time or I remember that time, make notes, because in the next week or two, we'll be sending out an announcement asking for your writings. But now that as people share the rest of their stories today, make notes, make, oh yeah, I remember the time. And
sorry, I forgot. I have this piece of paper right in front of me and I completely forgot.
That's okay. I just didn't want to go through too many because I'm sure everybody's thinking, oh yeah, I remember when I met David. Oh yeah, I remember that time and I remember this. So start making notes of what you want, what were meaningful experiences or things to you, and we will be requesting you to write them and send them in.
So I have a question for you regarding that. So for those of us our age, do you have a memory of David before he was even a minister, of course? And then did you have any other noticing of him in the later time as recognizing him as a spiritual master? So what's your first memory of him in the 70s?
Well, it's interesting because my earliest memory is it was funny because we were all going to those early services and early kriyas. Right. And I remember going with him. He had either purchased or started a little nursery, with plants and things. So he was very much involved in that. And I think I remember going to one of his, early houses that he was living in. And he was just, one of us. And right. And then he just dreamed past. And it's interesting. It took a long time to with Mother, we were always just in such awe and such respect, and you kind of spoke when you were spoken to, and David, it was just always so easy. And it's just interesting isn't the word, but as he evolved, it's quite a journey. Everybody do lots of writing. It's interesting too, even taking on this task of, I've been giving a lot of thought to how we're going to compile this book, and it's made me even closer to David. Like I feel him, it'll be interesting what he has us put together.
First, it's collecting the stories, so that's why you're announcing it today. So that's so important. I agree.
Yeah, collecting the stories is definitely the first part, and everybody I know has lots to share. And it's interesting too because the younger people that are around will have lots of time to share, but some of us older folks, we have things to share, and we might not be around forever. I already am thinking, gee, it's too bad Wynn isn't here to write and Christine isn't here to write. Right. So don't delay, the meter is running.
Thank you. Jerry, I remember you being at one of the brunches with Mother. My first memory of you and meeting David was right around that same time too, wasn't it?
Yes, that was at that restaurant in, I think, North
Lake Forest Park.
Yeah.
North Lake, that's right, yeah. Yeah.
North end of the lake there.
Yeah.
I don't remember that much detail from meeting David that first time. Mm-hmm. It was more the collective group, and I can't remember who brought me into that, to that table. But you were there. Mm-hmm. David was there. Lois was there. Steve Fisher was there. Mm-hmm. I think Gloria and Michael were there too.
Right.
And the thing I remember, I already had a sense Mother was already, how can I put it? There was certainly some sense that she was delegating something or other to David. I didn't understand it entirely at the time. Mm-hmm. But what I remember from that breakfast meeting was that we just laughed the whole time through. And it was It was just so, it was so much fun. I don't,
we were at the kids' table. We were at the kids' table.
Totally. I don't remember why we laughed, but we laughed the whole way through that breakfast.
I remember that too, yeah.
And I thought, this is, and I did have David in mind as somebody sort of a little bit set apart from us. I thought, well, this is, I can live with this kind of a spiritual life. Because we had such fun at that table. It was quite funny. But this morning, I was thinking about us having this meeting, and I thought you might ask us to reflect on David a bit. So I was going through my mind. I was thinking of the various ways in which he has changed my life, and in little details. And at times over the time that I knew him, it would be in specific words, either in a talk or just in conversation with him, that he would make a little suggestion. I'd realize, oh, yeah, that would work well. I'll do that. And then also, and we did talk about this a little bit, there were, it's hard to describe, but I could feel his mind on mine. There would be a suggestion coming through the ether. I have no other way to put it. He didn't have to say anything. It'd be an impression that came. And he wasn't even in town. He was somewhere else. And I would realize, oh, yeah, that's David. And that would be a good idea, too. I should do that, too.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
So I was thinking about that this morning, of all the different ways. And really, I concluded it would take me a half an hour to go through them. And even then, I would give them scant attention, because there's so many little things. It's like, I was thinking metaphorically, it's a good tradesman needs a good set of tools. Right. And I think a good spiritual tradesman also needs a set of tools. And that's what David gave me bit by bit by bit. These, oh yeah, you could do this. You could chant Rum Num under your breath, even when you're out in public. Just keep it going all day long.
Yeah.
Things like that. That, well, they definitely put wind in my sails. And as I was going through that exercise this morning, I very much had a sense of David's mind on mine. Like, I was being uplifted quite, it was very pleasant.
Yeah, you've never mentioned that before, so it's very interesting to hear. Yeah. All your experience too.
Yeah, it was, I haven't really got a good way to describe some of these things yet. Some of the experiences that I had with David, I just don't quite have words yet to explain them with. But it has been a definite treat, and I just don't see, like, I know Mother is my guru, but, and she was like, and I had a dream actually within a day or so of actually sitting down to talk to her, which was, she, in this dream, she blew up the east wall of my family home and put in a big picture window. That was in the dream. That was Mother.
Is that right?
Wow. So she was like, she pierced the universe and brought in light. But David taught the sort of details that, like I say, gave me tools on a sort of local and detailed level of what I could do to make the spiritual life go forward. I don't know that I would have been able to make it. I don't know what Mother would have in mind otherwise, but he was very important that way as a teacher in my life, to give me those little details, that set of tools to make this go forward. So, like, I have a friend here in Victoria who met David twice, and we talk about spiritual things now and then. And I've often just sort of jokingly said, well, I think I'm going to owe Mother at least one life. And I've recently started, well, I probably will owe David a life too. So I'll be coming back a few times to deal with that, to repay those debts, I think. But I really much appreciate having met David. Can't imagine doing this life without his influence in my life.
Right. It's very nice.
And thanks for the opportunity to be able to say these things.
Yeah. And also, and of course, we need you to write too. That's I'm so glad this is serendipitously coming in at the same time. Yeah, I love this idea of calling the book Memories of David. That would be just, some people don't care for the Memories of Mother being just too obviously a straightforward presentation. But David wanted to change that book, Memories of Mother, to a legacy of divine love. Kate, is that correct?
Yes, yeah, we just heard that recently. Yeah.
So, of course, we have to think of something a little better. But for now, just so we all know it, to focus the mind, we're going to call it Memories of David.
Well, since I'm on, I can't even begin to talk about the whole time, all the years that we knew David and moved pretty closely with him for many years. But I just wanted to mention, I probably won't write about it, so I'll mention the first time I was a little bit aware of who he was. It was one of my first times to go to Bonnie's and having met Mother. Maybe it was the second time. And I had said, Mother was standing in the back, and then after people were kind of gathering around, I was waiting for my ride or something, and I was talking to a few people. And then all of a sudden, I see over in the side, sitting on a couch, and because everybody else was up and moving around, there was this person completely immobile in a meditative state. He was gone. He was somewhere else. And it was just a very new thing for me to see somebody like that. And I made a note of him in my mind. And then I don't think it was for another 3 years when I started coming down here to see Larry, and Larry and David were close friends, and I met David then. And at that point, he was just like a friend and a buddy and a fellow disciple. But that memory of him sitting there kind of pointed him out as somebody who had who was special and who had perhaps attained more than many of the other devotees at that point. But so that I didn't revisit that until later in his life. He became kind
those
of
days,
a spiritual buddy at that point afterwards.
Those days, he used to sit in the back. Now, there was a little library behind the main room that the doors were opened up into the main living room.
Right.
So there was people, extra places to sit.
But he wasn't there that time. He was sitting
there. But I'm just saying that was common for him to be back there and just sit out like that. Yeah.
And that's maybe why I never saw him again. But it was that until 1979. So I just had that memory. And when I met him again through you, I went, oh, there's that man again. Yeah.
I can share my first meeting with David and just a little lead up. So Lois and Jerry's kids and my kids grew up together. And I had done work in the Course in Miracles, and we were at a swim meet one time because the boys all competed, and Lois and I started talking, and we had all these same thoughts and beliefs and things. And so she started talking about David, and then she said, oh, David's coming over. Would you like to come up? And I can't remember at that time if we'd started doing some meditation at her house or not. I don't think we had yet. So David was there, and David did a talk, and after the talk, we were talking, and I explained that, I had views about religion and spirituality. And I said, but, I've always listened to what other people said and learned from other people's experiences and really had my own. And he just looked at me and said, it's time to start living on your own and finding your own experiences. Especially along the spiritual path was what we were talking about. And, I just never looked back from that day forward. I said, okay, I just knew. And so that's what started it. And then, we started the meditation at Lois and Jerry's every Wednesday, and David would come over off and on. And then there was a chance Oh, my first Korea experience too. I was scheduled to take some kids to a conference, and there's no way I could get out of it. And Korea was happening that week, right? And so I just never even thought, this is where I just so believe in the power of things, because there's no way. Literally, I don't know, a couple of days before Korea was happening, I read the autobiography of a yogi, chapter, I think it's 26. And it talks about, I can't exactly remember. I'm not going to go find my book right now just for time's sake. But I just thought, oh, I've got to do this. And within like these 2 days, the girls all decided they weren't going to the conference. Something happened. There was only one boy left. So I got another guy to take him. And I was on my way to Korea, to Seattle. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, oh, my gosh. Now I just know, you know, things happen. You can't plan things, you know. And I just know that that was David's orchestrating, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, and gosh, that was a long time ago when Geraldine was talking, because I know she was at my first Korea. So, you know, it was a long time ago. And our kids were just little. So anyway, yeah, pretty amazing stuff. So I will write some of this down. So yeah, I will write it down and get it to Jenna. So anyway, yeah, and I may have to bug out of here in just a few minutes.
So let me ask you a question then. So when you were talking with Lois, what was that about, and how did that, had you already set up established that kind of relationship with her, or was this brand new and it just struck you at that time that it's the right thing to do?
So we knew each other. We were friends, right? Cause the boys, but we had never talked about that. We were at a swim meet, and I do not know what was said. Something about, it may have been past lives. It may have been, just how we viewed the world, you know, and things. And Lois just started talking, and I'm going, oh yeah. And oh yeah. And we spent the whole swim meet talking. And then she said, so there's no mistakes there, you know. And then she said, oh, and she started talking about David. And of course, you know, I mean, I knew of the Hickenbottoms, but the boys were all older than I was. So, and maybe not Mark. I don't remember where Mark fit in, but anyway, I think they were older anyway. So I didn't really know the boys, except for Jerry because of our kids. But anyway, we just literally spent that whole swim meet talking, and then from there after at swim meets, and then David was going to come over, and so she invited me up, and of course I went, and yeah, and it was just you know, just general principles about things, and it's hard to pinpoint. And what's really interesting to me, and I've talked to David about this, was before I started on this path, like I could talk to somebody about religion, spirituality, that stuff. David's my guru. I would say David silenced me. I don't have those conversations with people. It's not, because to me, it's like, I respect how you feel, and I'm not going to try to convince you to, you know, I may say something to somebody, but it's just like, I've got silenced on that, you know, to talk about how I believe, what I believe, because I'm not going to be convinced differently. So why have the conversation, you know? It's been very.
And God directs you at the right time. I'm with you on that. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. I had a kid at a conference one time that wanted to be a minister, and he was in a very fundamentalist church. I don't remember what it was, but he really kept pushing and wanted to have a conversation. And I said, you know, these are not conversations I have, but if you want to have this conversation, I'm going to ask you questions and I'm going to say, these are things you need to think about as you move forward. And we did, we had a nice conversation, but that's maybe one of the few times that I've even had those conversations, except for with my son, Brad, which is cool because, you know, he's been through Korea. So we can talk, but.
I know you have to go, but so final question, was the notion that David was a guru or just a teacher or just someone who could talk about these things when he was in your mind, what were you thinking you were seeing? Going to see, sorry.
I knew that I was going to see somebody that was, I want to say highly evolved, but at that point, I know he hadn't, you know, he hadn't had his year in silence. He hadn't probably come as far as he came, but I knew that I was meeting someone that was going to be a guide. Yeah, that status. So I did know that.
Thanks.
Yeah. And it panned out, and I actually brought a few friends, and they had so many good things to say, but they never came back. It was like too much. They weren't ready for that yet. And I could never understand. I did not want to have what we have here, you know.
That's a mystery. That's a mystery all on its own.
It is. Yeah, I don't question it anymore. I'm just very, very, feel very blessed to be where I'm at.
The guru chooses the disciple too. I think this is the thing that, because the process in our own mind is that we're making decisions on this, and I made this decision, and then I met this teacher. But the guru, and I look back at my own life with Mother, I see reflections or ripples in the pond that preceded her. So,
yeah. Don't they say when the student is ready, the teacher appears or something? But the teacher knows. But that's, I never thought it from that perspective of the guru chooses.
Right.
Dude, wow, that's powerful. But it's, and no doubt, look how I ended up getting to my first Kriya, you know. And there's no way in the 3 months beforehand that was going on. I was already committed to this. It had already been paid for. I could never have foreseen that.
So what I'm pointing out is that was David talking to you, not Lois.
Yeah. Okay.
See, that's the thread that's being used by an emissary. Yeah.
Wow. That's that's a new thought and a really powerful thought.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
I might just share that one of the things that amazed me about David is how available he always was. I have no idea what God had him working on day and night, but it seemed like when I would write an email to him, and it might take a few days for him to reply, but when I would get that reply, the detail and the care and the attention that was in what he wrote, it was amazing. It was just amazing to me. And if I was asked, coming to him with something and that he would write back with his teachings, it was the same teachings as what he gives in his talks. But when he would write it, for me at that time, some of the words just changed, you know, the cells of my being, the power and the love that was in that. So, just reflecting on, I don't know, I imagine everyone in their own way has had a time of either talking with David in person when it seems like, you know, he's just so 100% present with you. And you feel that he feels what you're feeling. He knows what you're thinking. So that even if you can't really express it well, that understanding is there. And there's just no other experience of communicating with another individual that was like communicating with David.
Very nice. You know, the Himalaya used to say, had a saying that words are like shells and they can hold fluid, you know, liquid water. And this, and words are like shells in that the, what's conveyed by the word is what's in the shell itself. And that's Shakti, you know, that's the spiritual grace that comes with the words. Some people can say the same exact words and not have an impact on you the same way. I always thought that's an interesting idea because, you know, when Martin Luther King did his speech, the power of that, it's amazing to talk to people all over the world and they all mentioned that, how that affected them so dramatically. And what the Spirit of God coming through him, filling those words, was amazing. So we see this with all levels, at all levels of understanding or realization.
I wanted to comment, Larry, of just so grateful for the many levels that David would work with me. We were blessed to be often in close proximity, you know, relative geography to where he lives, so could take advantage of a lot of the workshops and so many workshops of such diverse topics that were very practical, but brought together as a theme. So I've been very kind of pragmatic throughout my life. So having him kind of come down in many ways to my level to explain nuggets that would help me through my day are just so welcomed, and just always amazed at how we could operate at all different levels. And for me, it really didn't dawn on how powerful as a guru he was until I was traveling with him in India, and could then see someone who I got to know as first more of a friend than a guru or a teacher, and to see him through the eyes of others and realize such a jewel that he was.
Yeah, that was a special time, wasn't it? You and Henry and David, and who else was traveling with you, by the way, at that time?
We connected with Donnie, and of course Carla.
Carla. Oh.
And that was just an amazing trip, and amazing to see him along with Swami Satchidananda, Swami Muktananda, Duli Baba, and all the sites traveling. We traveled east to west across all of India with them, and it was we weren't traveling with them the whole time, but on and off, and so an amazing time.
Interesting.
And the way he would always be so warm with all of our children. He loved the kids. And would just bubble and come down to their level and engage in any way he could. It was always a delight to see him with all the children of the group. He had a special place for them, for sure.
I'll share a story about being one of those children.
Right.
Of course, he was great fun. And during Sunday school, we would often have God walks and walk down from my grandma's to Matthew's Beach and feed the ducks and go on the swings and the merry-go-round. And so there was a lot of fun. And he was always joking and jovial and kind of like I've said before, like a big jungle gym. He would throw us around and swing us around. But my favorite memory of him from Sunday school was when he would do guided meditations, and all of us rowdy kids would lay down either in my grandma's basement or in the church we moved to not too far from there. And he would guide us through from our present space, our present state of mind, into connection with God and his voice. This day, I hear his voice.
Yeah.
And that comes back, that he can immediately transport me to connection with the divine. And he would lead us into, taking one step down a stairwell, and with each step, your body is calming more and more. But there's just nothing like listening to his words, and there is nothing, no other thought could even enter my consciousness other than what he was guiding us to do.
He was such a good person to give guided meditations. His guided meditations were really very good all the time. when we recorded quite a few, it just occurs to me we should bring those out separately, just excerpt them from the talks that he gave. And there, you know, he would do this at the beginning of a talk and just show them as guided meditations, because it's really quite powerful, the power of his voice and the power of the ideas that are presented to the mind as it goes through, because it is very, very much takes you to the deepest levels very, very easily, too. It's a great idea. Mother has a few, too. We could it's another bad idea. Those are very nice memories. I remember you kids. And, of course, I was involved in, as a Sunday school teacher, too, so I remember going down to Matthews Beach, too. That's why it's easy for me to picture that whole thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fun times, wasn't it?
Both Greg and Mira have spoken about David and children. But I actually found there was an aspect of that in the way he dealt with me at times too. And I don't mean that it was like an over familiarity or anything like that, but especially toward the end of when he came back from the last set of experiences in India, I noticed that it was a real, well, the way I explained it to myself is that it was the Divine Mother was just, I felt embraced and indulged at some level that, it's kind of that, it's disbelief that God is this detailed and this interested and this concerned about my life, my little old life. That's the way it would come across, that it was the Divine Mother in David was indulging me in some odd way that I don't really understand at this point in time. And I don't mean that was an overfamiliarity. Again, it was, I always had in mind this is who David is, but at some level it's the only word that comes to mind is that he indulged me at some level that I hadn't experienced before. So I have a childhood experience with David too.
Well, you were very close to him.
I'm lucky. I'm very lucky. Yeah. Stuff that he brought to my attention that,
well, all the things that we wanted to do, we always called you too. So whether you could come or not, you know, when just he and I, maybe a few other people were thinking of going over to Solduk is one example, but other things too, we always call you.
I do appreciate that. Yeah, he even gave me books to read, which were history books, actually. Mm-hmm. And they were really interesting. And so I'd read them. And in fact, there was one that was a series of three. I went and bought the other two because I enjoyed the one so much. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I didn't have a context, just that he handed me this book. You'll enjoy this. And then later he pointed me still to another book. And then over time, I came to realize he's showing me stuff about my past lives. I didn't realize that at the time. It was, a good bit later. That's what was going on here. Because at that point, then God was showing me stuff too. And so this was where David was kind of greasing the wheel, I guess, for when later on I'd see, oh, that's part of my past life. So that was kind of neat too. He must have seen that. I don't see how else. Those books were quite specific. So he must have seen it. Like he had some vision, inner vision of it.
Well, you and I have thought over the years that you and I have been with other, in other lifetimes together and with David. So this is not surprising at all. There's some truth there. I know there's some truth. Because when we all first met, it was immediately, and Michael too, it was immediate familiarity.
By the way, yep. I agree with Michael as well. Yes, yeah. There were no. I didn't feel like I had to have a guard up at all.
Right.
With you guys.
Yeah, how many times have we done something like this in other lifetimes? Been together, talking about people in a loving fashion. Nothing wrong with, I hate the word gossip, but there's nothing wrong with talking about other people. It's only, as David says, it's only if you feel pleasure in their pain, and then you know that that's the definition of gossip, or at least bad gossip. But because, you know, you don't want to make it so you can't talk about anybody, or you can't remember, and that these are all harmful. They're not necessarily that way at all. These are all, this is really the stuff of life itself. Judy, what's your first memory of David? In the 70s also, right?
Are you talking to me, Larry?
Yeah, I am.
Well, I have the very first memory I have of David is being at a little, it must have been a potluck gathering at Dale and Diane's. Mm-hmm. And David was there. And my whole focus was mother.
Right.
100%. So I never got to know any of the devotees down there, and I really didn't care. Pretty bad, but it was just, mother was so powerful and such a magnet. But anyways, so we were at this potluck, and I remember sitting out, I mean, I've told this story before, but probably some people haven't heard it, but I remember sitting out on the steps, and David was one of the people sitting out there. And there's one thing that never left me is something he said, and I had never spoken to him before, but he said that he came to a crossroad where he had to choose either God or sleep. And he said, well, that was an easy choice. I knew what I needed more than sleep. I needed God. And so he gave his nights to God. And I remember thinking, well, that's pretty straightforward. I can do that. I know I need God more than sleep. But turned out I wasn't anywhere at that level where I could make that the right choice. And then another memory that pops into my head, because like I said, I never thought about David. I just thought about mother. And so I remember after the memorial service, when mother left the body, I remember being at David's house. And he took me into the back room and he showed me some things. And one of the things I don't remember, the only thing I remember which blew me away was he showed me the roses that mother received, the rose petals that mother received from Master for her Kriya initiation. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, you know, I was just in such awe. And then shortly after mother's passing, David sent me a little parcel with one of mother's saris in it and something else. Oh, it was a piece of fabric from mother's ochre colored robe. And it's easy to get emotional. And then there was no more David. We always lived far, far away from Seattle, and we had little children. We didn't have any money to travel down there. But anyways, because I think because I was so focused on mother, when mother left, that was everything. And so I never felt any attraction to go down. And I found once a letter that David wrote to me, and I don't even remember receiving it, but it was such a lovely, friendly letter during those years after mother passed. And then I think it was 2010, God gave me the desire to go to Loon Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 100%, 100%. You know, I remember seeing David, and silly me, he's getting out of the car And I said to him, so that's what you look like, you know, just silly. And, but that retreat changed me 100%. And to quote Rebecca Harvey, I was smitten. I remember her saying that to me once at the Loon Lake retreat. I'm smitten, Judy. And I was the same. And there was, I couldn't even put it into words. There were no words. There weren't even any thoughts. All I knew is that I will never miss another retreat. And I never did from then on. And I was a little pest. I was a little pest just wanting to be with David every single chance I could get, no matter what. And that's how we ended up traveling so much with him, because Judy couldn't be without him.
Yeah, God brings all of that, didn't he? Man, that was amazing. Yeah.
I think I picked you up from the airport. For that,
yeah, you did.
Loon Lake retreat, and I remember.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Talking a lot in the car.
Mm-hmm. And I was just gonna say one last little thing. I wouldn't have all this emotional attachment and longing to be with him if I knew who he really was. Because if I knew who he really was, I would never be without him. As with Mother.
Just going to say that kinship felt with Judy. The first Loon Lake retreat I came to, I still didn't really know who David was. Mm-hmm. And I remember I wanted to sit at a certain table at lunch. And Judy was like, no, I'm going to go sit at the table with David. And she sat at the table with David for every meal. And I was like, wow, she's like over the moon for this guy. You know, like she drank the Kool-Aid. I didn't have it at that time. And I just saw that in Judy, that she just would always sit at David's table for meals. And so the second retreat I came to, I was right there with Judy sitting, getting the seat at David's table every chance I could get. And I was like, I got it. So I think that was the time when I let you know that I got it.
And that comparison is interesting, isn't it? Even your own experience was the, you know, the one experience, and then the other one, you can see, oh, now I get it. Yeah.
I remember Andrea, we were, you know, I wouldn't purposely position myself to be in line at the food at the retreats. It wasn't a conscious thing, but I kind of liked just being really close to David, so that when he sat down, I was basically right behind him. And Andrea gave me a look once that's like, I know what you're up to, Judy, right? And I remember saying to her, I sang a little song to her. I said, I will follow him wherever he may go, etc. Right? Mm-hmm. So when you're given the eyes to see, you're very, very blessed. So you take advantage of it. Mm-hmm.
And I may as well mention my first meeting with David was at the same place, Dale and Diane's, and I remember him saying that you know sleep or God, and he chose God. And I don't know if it's 10 to 20 years later, because it took quite a while to recover from mother left. Judy had gone to the retreat, and then she came back and said, you know, we've got to go see David. And so we went to Mount Vernon, and I had three things I wanted from David. I never told anybody, and all three came through, and he addressed them all, and it was very moving. Yeah.
So he did that without you prompting him?
I never told him or anybody in the world. Just right. God.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
you know, it's so.
That's a story for Mother too, isn't it? That happened a lot with Mother, didn't it?
Yeah, for sure. So.
Wow, that's something.
Yeah, and then after that, it was the same thing, you know, wherever he went or was, that's where we wanted to be.
Do you remember which house of Dale and Diane's that was? Was it the house on the downtown Seattle area, or was it the one in North Seattle? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I know they had a front yard, and
you had to climb steps to get up. You had to climb steps to get up to the
yes, house. Yes.
Okay, so that's their place on 34th or whatever it was. Okay.
Yeah, and it would probably have been around 1976, 7, 8 type thing, somewhere in that area.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you got a lot of good time with him too, with traveling down in the South in Arizona and California, and doing things with him, didn't you?
Yeah, it was absolutely spectacular too. Well, one of the times we were coming into Moab, and we didn't know where they were, Carl and David. And Moab's it's not a big city, but there's lots of streets and lots of roads and lots of places you could be. You know, it was, Judy was a little concerned to how we're going to find David, because we didn't have cell phones in those days and things like that. And I just calmly went about my business. And basically, we met him probably 10 miles outside of town on the Colorado River. And he said, he was very calm, expecting us. And he just said, we saved your spot. Because it was just such a big area. It's like, you know, one time Mother was driving by us in her car on the freeway. We were going down there, and she slowed down to our speed because we weren't going that fast. She waved, smiled, and then carried on. What are the chances of that, you know? So it was, it was a real joy to travel with David and Carla, for sure.
Yeah, that was a special time. Yeah, we were down there one time with you guys. It was nice to see that whole lifestyle that David and Carla and you guys were living.
Yeah, for sure. I remember it well. Yeah. And one of a little story with the place we were at was Lake Kaweah. And they had their big Class C, and they weren't parked where you were, like right near Jerry's place. They were parked on the other side, and it was totally exposed to the sun. And David was having trouble with his batteries in his RE. And so usually if there was he's having trouble, I come over and try and see what I could do. And so I'm there working in the sun, and it's just super, super hot. And being a redhead, like 10 minutes in the sun, I'd be burnt type thing, eh? And so I'm working totally exposed in the sun. And then David went inside the RV and got an umbrella and provided shade for me. So, you know, it's just like amazing. A master would care.
That's right.
He always did.
He was a redhead too. Yeah, he had that complexion.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so many great memories, for sure.
That's very nice. So, Honor, I remember you so well that day that we first met at on Hornby Island. What's your memories of that day? That was your first time meeting David.
Where was that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was speaking to Honor.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Yeah. By the way, Rick and Judy, you went to Hornby Island a few times with that during that time? No, that was always one. Yeah.
I did. Went to
Hornby. Yes, right. But you'd already met him.
That was my chance to take Korea the second time with the full knowledge of what I was doing.
Oh, is that true? So he taught Korea up there?
Well, no, maybe I'm misspeaking. Sorry. I'm thinking of where Connie used to live.
Oh, Prince Rupert.
Prince Rupert, sorry.
Oh, wow.
But I did get to go to Hornby once. Mm. And Max got to come with, too, so that was really fun. A lot of people have heard my story of how I met David. So, I mean, Janet could almost, she could take it out of the journal and put that in the book. But
right.
I just was in Indiana and at one time in my life, I read lots of books. I worked in the library and I read all the books in the religious studies section about people finding their gurus going off to India. And a lot of them were Buddhist, you know, books. But anyway, and then I just remember thinking, well, that's never going to happen to me. Like I had the desire to do something like that, to find a teacher, but I thought that's never going to happen to me.
Right.
And then, you know, many years passed and then I was in going to this Unity Church. I was feeling like it wasn't a good fit for me anymore, but I just kept going because kind of the social aspect to it. But they said, they announced that Dr. Hughes and his wife needed someone to drive bicycles to Seattle in this truck. They needed like another driver because they ran this outward bound type of thing every summer. And for some reason, I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. Like I've never been to Seattle. And then my ego was trying to talk me out of it and say, you can't do that. You know, you have a child to take care of. You have a job. But it kept on. And, you know, it was all David and mother.
Yeah, of course.
I know that now, but it that idea that I was to go just kept on tapping me on the shoulder, basically. Mm-hmm. And so then I called Dr. Hughes, who was my chiropractor. They were the ones doing this. And I said, do you still need someone to drive? And they said, yes, we do. And I said, okay, well, I have to, you know, arrange some things, but I think I'm going to be able to do it. And I proceeded to cancel my vacation request for work and put in a new vacation request that was like, you know, immediately coming up. Arranged to have my son's dad, you know, take, you know, whether he could take care of him while I was gone. And everything just was, you know, taken care of.
Yeah, of course.
And then when we were driving, the other people kept asking me, now, who do you know in Seattle? And I was like, I don't really know anyone. But I thought I was going to look at midwifery schools because I was interested in midwifery. And, but I didn't, it wasn't like I was worried. I had this sense that something, like, they were worried about me, but I wasn't worried that I didn't know anybody. So then, the place where this whole, where all the people were taking off from was the Unity Church in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. And so I was, used to attend.
So I was sleeping in the basement. All the teenagers were sleeping all in the basement of the church for like 2 days or so, something or day, until they were taking off on their journey. They were going to be riding to California. So I did look at the midwifery schools and all that, but basically, I had been going up to the chapel to meditate, just to get away from the hubbub. So I went up to the chapel and I said, okay, God, should I go to Seattle Center and see Bo Diddley, or should I help in the kitchen? And the answer was no to both of those options. Stay right here. And it was super strong, you know, direction. Like, I was like, oh, okay.
Who's talking to me? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so strong, like, stay right here. And then I was realizing, oh, that lady who was Glory had told me that there was some kind of meditation ceremony happening. And I said, well, I'm just going to be here for a few minutes. So then I found her and I said, well, what time is that happening? And she told me. And then I didn't exactly, you know, just stay right there. But I went downstairs and changed my clothes. And then I came back up. And I saw these people with fruit and flowers. And some of them were dressed very nicely. And I was feeling kind of, I was kind of sunburned. I'd been walking around the waterfront. Anyways, Jill spotted me and said, can I help you or something? And I just said, well, I'm supposed to be here. Or something to happen.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, well, you have to talk to David. So she brought me, and so I was, first time I met David, standing right at the front doors to the Unity Chapel in Seattle. And he asked me two questions. He said, and I just told him, like, I'm supposed to be here for this ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me, do you accept this line of gurus? And he named them all off. And I just said, yes. Even though I didn't know what it was, I knew that it was what I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, can you come to a service tomorrow in West Seattle? And I just said, yes. And he said, someone will arrange to give you a ride. And I didn't initially, you know, I had the strong direction that I was supposed to be there, but I didn't recognize David for who he was right at first. Because all the, you know, cliches of like an Indian, you know, an East Indian person or someone with some foreign background, like, he just looked like a regular white guy.
What do you think was it that prompted you to, I mean, if you think about the days, especially meeting Glory and then Jill, what was the feeling within yourself? Was it, was there a spark in their faces or the group of people that you saw? Was it the overall feeling, or was it more destiny as you're describing it? It sounds like you're following a destiny, and this is understandable because if it's your destiny, you tend to be more open and not specific. That's why maybe not recognizing David, of course. He's creating all of the ambience that you're feeling, but you haven't identified the source of it. So is that kind of accurate? That you were in a few were floating?
I was floating?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then once I was in there, I saw, you know, it was a large group of people, none of whom I'd ever met.
Right.
In that chapel. But yet I had this very strong feeling like they all looked familiar to me.
Interesting, yeah.
And I knew that I was in the right place.
Yeah.
And of course, later on, you know, I just became smitten, as Rebecca and Judy said. Like, I just went everywhere David went. I tried to never miss an opportunity to be with him. And I probably was too attached to him. But my life changed forever. I mean, you know, then I moved here 2 months later, and my life changed forever.
Amazing story, yeah.
And Max's life changed also.
Yeah. Well, Mother came from a similar part of the world from you as you, and she was smitten when she got to Seattle also.
Yes, and when I heard her story, I was very...
You could relate to it, huh?
I could very much relate to it, coming from the Midwest. Yeah, it was just like this magnet, you know, that I thought, oh, Seattle, I've never been there. I think that would be a nice place to visit,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I knew there had to be something more than Bloomington, Indiana. It was getting very old for me and very constricting feeling. If I had stayed there, I would have been Ed's ex for the rest of my life. And I was ready for a big change.
Time for a change, yeah.
I was very ready.
That's so open of you, Michelle. I was there when you, I was at that Kriya when you showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of went with everything, followed your intuition. I was amazed by your story. I still am. I love hearing it every time.
Yeah, me too.
I get to hear it.
I'm amazed by it still.
And it really, Michelle, I mean, I think your loyalty has been really outstanding, because do you know how I think, I mean, I guess in our spiritual experience of all of us, we can understand something like this happening. But on the other hand, somebody who's just come to something like this and takes no thought ahead or no, it's probably very rare for somebody like that to stay with a path as long as you have. You know, I think that seems to me, although as a number of us have said, you got to meet our guru, and there you are, and your whole life changes. But yours is on a more dramatic level of knowing nothing about it when you walk in that room, and then taking it all on and continuing with it. So I think it must be a very rare thing.
So what year was that Unity Church gathering?
2000.
2000?
June of 2000.
Oh, thanks. I was there, but I didn't remember when it was.
And then David goes into silence for a year.
Yeah, right. Literally, right after I moved here, he went into silence, and my ego was temporarily going, you've got to be kidding me. I'm not going to drive all the way down there. Well, yeah, of course, I drove down there every chance I got, and then my ego was saying, I'm not going to drive all the way to West Seattle on Wednesday nights. Well, yes, I did, of course, because a lot, you know, things didn't, I thought, West Seattle, drive all that way just for a recorded talk. Well, it was a recorded talk of Mother's, and it was so powerful, I wouldn't remember what it was about sometimes, but I got so uplifted. And,
yeah.
Charmy was the one that gave me a ride to Kate and Larry's house the next day after Kriya.
Oh, interesting.
We took you somewhere right after Kriya. I remember one night we took you.
Probably
right during that time. We took you to our house. I don't remember when.
I was staying at my friend's house in Lower Queen Anne, who I had met. When I got to Kate and Larry's house, I remember that picture of Mother that's behind Larry right now. And we were one of the first people there, and I sat and I looked at Mother's picture. And she was just like giving me a spiritual baptism or a huge hug. And she just, poured all this love into me. And I started bawling. And I said to Chad, "Who is that?" She said, "That's your Param Guru." He said, "That's your Param Guru." It was like she was introducing herself to me.
Yeah.
And so that was, I never went into midwifery. That was just the surface thing that my ego needed to get me to Seattle.
It's all a mystery, isn't it? It's really amazing.
And I asked David at some point, I asked him if he knew I was coming, and he wouldn't answer me.
Well, I told Janice that I had put together did a lot of the work on putting together the memories of Mother. So I'm just thinking today, Janice, that you've got a perfect time to launch all of this with all of us speaking about David and getting the juices flowing. And Janice has written down that you can share, you know, a lot of us have done beginning stories, but funny stories or deeply profound stories or any stories, they don't have to be when you first met David. But it's a good process to go through anyways, and to think about it. And
well, it's 1 o'clock, so.
Just can we all think about Jill, who's away with she's been in the emergency room with her mother since 4 a.m.
Oh,
so
in
we
the
can
emergency.
All keep them in our thoughts and prayers. She's the one that asked Larry to do this whole thing today. It was from her initial impulse, and then she wasn't able to be here. So if
she normally does almost all the stuff for David's birthday. She's been doing that for years. So
if we can just send our love to her.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kate.
Well, if we want to sit and meditate, I've got a little bit of music to play, and we'll just go out that way since we've had a closing prayer.
Thank you, Larry and Kate and everyone.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys for all coming.
Ditto.